Hi, this is Rick Emerson, and the following encore of Legion of News is brought to you by Squires Electric. Whether it's electrical wiring, Ethernet wiring, or wiring of any kind at all in your home or business, Squires Electric can make your life easier. Find out more at squireselectric.com or call 503-252-1609. Squires Electric.
Greetings, fellow Portlanders. From the Emerson News Network, this is Legion of News!
From high atop the Milkpacking District in the heart of beautiful southeast Portland, Oregon, this, my friends, is Legion of News, a one-hour distillation of all-important knowledge from everywhere. My name is Rick Emerson alongside Don Taylor, who is, even now as I speak these words to you, preparing information on a vast swath of happenings, including, but not limited to, the following.
A tornado kills 89 people in Missouri. A man is crushed in an Albany recycling center. And Harold Camping is flabbergasted that the rest of us aren't burning in hell.
As always, my friends, have no doubt that this conglomeration of factual discourse and ideological screed will render you shocked, amazed, enraptured, and demonstrably more intelligent than when you began this hour. And now, without further ado, pay heed for this is Legion of News.
Good afternoon, I'm Dawn Taylor, and this is absolutely everything you need to know for Monday, March 23rd, 2011.
Everything.
89 people and counting have been confirmed dead in Joplin, Missouri, after one of the deadliest tornadoes in state history tore a six-mile path along the southwestern part of the state on Sunday. The twister is estimated to have been a half mile across when it hit the town, destroying much of the city and ripping the roof off the hospital. Joplin City Councilwoman Melody Cobert-Keene told Reuters, "It's just utter devastation anywhere you look to the south and the east. Businesses, apartment complexes, houses, cars, trees, schools, you name it, it's leveled." The death toll is expected to climb today as local officials conduct a door-to-door search of the damaged area. The process was expected to be slowed by downed power lines and a series of gas leaks that caused fires across the city overnight. Kiri Sachetta, the principal of the local high school that was destroyed, told the Associated Press, "You see pictures of World War II, the devastation and all that with the bombing. That's really what it looked like. I couldn't even make out the side of the building." The Joplin tornado was one of 68 reported across seven Midwest states over the weekend, according to the National Weather Service. And speaking of many, many tornadoes across the Midwest, Christian radio mogul Harold Camping and all of his followers are just completely baffled by the fact that the apocalypse didn't actually happen. Also troubling for those who mortgaged their lives to help his cause of spreading the word, Camping isn't anywhere to be found to admit he was wrong or to make another prediction. Reuters reports the Family Radio's network headquarters remained shuttered and no one answered the door at the broadcaster's house in Alameda, California after his 6 p.m. deadline for death and destruction passed.
He is like 170 years old, so it's not out of the realm of possibility that he's just making his way to the door as we speak, like now.
And apparently he did. There was an update later. He did open his door briefly on Sunday to speak with reporters. And told He said he was flabbergasted. That was his word. Flabbergasted.
Awesome.
That his predictions did not come true. The 89-year-old fundamentalist preacher said, "It has really been a really tough weekend. I'm looking for answers.
I've got all this counting to do, and there's just not enough accountants in the world for this. They're really, you have no idea the kind of tax shelters are going to have to set up. It's just going to be nothing but work, work, work."
Robert Fitzpatrick, a retired transit worker and New York City resident, told Reuters, I don't understand why nothing has happened. He spent $140,000 of his savings to help camping Warren of Judgment
well
Day.
Well done. Awesome. I wonder if there's work at this camping ministries. I wonder if they need spokespeople. I wonder if they need someone to bring their word to the faithful, to the flock, to the brethren, the sistren.
You're thinking maybe there might be a few job openings
yes.
today?
I'm saying I would take that job like instantly, like in a heartbeat. Have no, believe me you. There is no world in which I would not take that gig if he would pay me enough.
Well, they don't seem to be short on money, because
no.
Camping spent millions of dollars on his billboards and his advertising to tell people to you know.
Well, it's easy to spend millions of dollars when it's actually not yours,
well,
when it's just sort of being handed to you by other people, and then you just use it to and it becomes in a self-perpetuating sort of money machine. Like as much as in America we are just inundated with sort of multi-level marketing scams, and guys are trying to get you to like sell bars of soap to your embarrassed relatives or whatever, or you know, somebody was like trying to get you to sell long distance cards, you know, to the guy, you know, or like greeting cards to, you know, with your obnoxious children to people at work. This is a guy who really has figured out the way that, you know, that you indeed can earn a lot of money in just a few hours in your spare time without leaving your home. So good for you, sir.
I think we're doing something terribly, terribly wrong.
What do you mean?
Well, I mean, here with our facilities.
You
here.
Mean that we've chosen poorly?
I think so.
That we're not engaging in a. That we're not as profitable as we might ideally be.
Yeah, and now granted, you know, we have ethics on our side, but...
on your side, maybe. Over on this side of the table, I got... No.
But it seems like bamboozling people, there's a lot more money in that.
No, it's really... There's the money that's to be made in hoodwinking cannot be overstated.
Mm. Also, my favorite stories about all of this came last week that apparently he gave his employees Friday off with pay. And the day off with pay, of course, would be reflected in their June paycheck.
Wait, so they were going to get the day off with pay, but it was just going to be deducted out of their June paycheck?
No, they were going to get paid the day off with pay, but then the next paycheck wasn't due until next month.
Oh, I see. All right.
So, yeah, so it was kind of, I guess people were just, you know, I guess they were assuming that the banking system would still be intact.
Maybe.
After the 1% of their other employees were...
Well, it wasn't like it was everybody that was going to be taken up, though. It was
right, because he had non-believers on his staff
It was
well.
Just the... Now, was he like a Jehovah's Witness where it was just the 144,000? Was there... In other words, was there a specific number?
It was a percentage. I believe there were only going to be like something like 2 to 3 million people worldwide.
Well, how
would you...
Well, our friend Scott Landerville was here this morning, and as he noted, how would you even notice if that number of people were gone? I mean, especially, because let's be honest, they're all going to be gone from Amish country. And, like, who's really going and doing a census of Mennonites or something? I mean, it's like, how would you even notice if 2 million people vanish from the earth today? Unless it was the guy, unless it was a guy who comes to give you your meds in the morning.
Well, someone would notice in some situations, like you said, there are a lot of people.
Ted was just here. Where's he at? Lunch, I think. Okay.
The faithful all hang out with each other, and they would all vanish, probably at once. And if they were, like, in their car, for example, their car would crash into something. And then no one is taking care of their dogs and their cats.
Well, that's assuming that it's those people, but it's probably not. That's the thing. It's like, even if he was right, he may have been right about a group of people that don't include, you know, doesn't include him.
So you think, for example, it could have been, like, say, you and I, who don't bamboozle people for their money. And he, for example, would be...
No, because we're still here.
I know.
I'm saying, how do we know that he wasn't right about some 2 million people somewhere?
Oh, I see what you're saying.
Like, if he just said, well, the Lord, in other words...
Like, there's some tribe in Africa that all of them are gone now.
If he just said, like, the Lord God Almighty is going to come and he will enrapture the 2 million faithful and he will take them with the heavenly host and the cherubim to their heavenly reward, where they will be ensconced in the bosom of the Lord Almighty forever and ever. And then those 2 million people just vanished. But it was like 2 million people from the 6 billion people on planet Earth. And if you assume that if you assume that he's a jackass and that most of the people that follow him are jagoffs, they're probably not going to go. So it's going to be a bunch of people you're not. The thing is, it's always the people you're not watching. And so it's just going to be
It's like there's entire towns in Sweden that could be missing now.
You know,
we have no idea.
It'd be like one of those spinster chicks that just sits at home and polishes Fabergé eggs and gives to charity. Who's going to miss her for like weeks? No one.
All the world's cat ladies disappeared.
And the cats can take care of themselves. So it's not like there's going to be a stink coming out of the house. Yeah. So I'm just saying it might have actually. We don't know that it didn't happen. That's all I'm saying.
It could be another week or so before we realize that these people are missing.
I am choosing to believe. I'm viewing God's hands as half full. You're listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. Thank you for joining us today. It is Monday, May 23rd, 2011, your first post-rapture Monday. Thank you for joining us. Coming up later in this hour, you get your Science on the March, also entertainment news next hour at RickEmersonShow.com, the Rick Emerson Radio. program.
Which is made of paper, apparently.
Which will be made of paper. Stuffing your ear holes full of tasty wisdom and knowledge and entertainment and, you know, and also just goo. We welcome today brand new subscribers, Lisa, Mina, and Tyler. That is Lisa, Mina, and Tyler. And I do believe that two of these people are sort of interconnected. I think that Lisa may, in fact... No, wait, I take it back. I believe that Mina actually subscribed, and then while she was at it, thought, why should I alone receive the pleasure of the Rick Emerson? But who am I to hog the fun? I think she actually then gave Tyler the gift subscription. So I think it's like Lisa's sort
lucky,
of just...
Lucky Tyler.
She's on her own dime. She's on God's good humor. Whereas Tyler's sort of, you know, he's like the plus one for Mina. For the next 90 days anyway, friend, and then you're on your own. So Lisa, Mina, and Tyler, they are joining the Rick Emerson. The Rick Emerson, they're going to be... Here's the thing. Once 1:30 comes around, the rest of you all are going to stay behind, but they are going to be raptured into another dimension that we call the Rick Emerson Show. And there... quite apart from the rest of humanity, they're going to be bathed in the warm glow of my musings. So that is at rickemersonshow.com, or you, yes, you, can be entertained for the low cost of just 32 cents a day. Has somebody ruled out the possibility that, yes, that just Macho Man Randy Savage was taken up to be with Christ, and that everyone else was left behind to suffer in the hell that is a savageless existence?
I hadn't really thought about that, but it makes perfect sense.
All right. Well, somebody now is speculating, in fact, that Jesus was on his way here, but was stopped by Macho Man Randy Savage.
he took him down.
Yeah. All right. if you want to get this program later on the day, you can do it via iTunes, also as a direct MP3 download here at Cascadia.fm or at LegionOfNews.com. You can also take it with you as a mobile product if you like at mobile.cascadia.fm at mobile.cascadia.fm. Here is Don Taylor.
I was practicing my oh no all weekend and it just wasn't any good. My voice isn't deep enough. It also doesn't help that my dog has a toy that when she chews on it, it goes oh no. So I just got all mixed up.
Also, by the time you perfected that, I think the joke was really going to be passed.
It would be meaningful for me.
Okay.
Yeah. President Barack Obama is...
You could do something else like snap into a retaining wall. I'm just saying.
Okay. President Barack Obama is 1/32nd Irish. I demand to see the proof of that. And he visited his ancestral homeland in Moneygall today. He stopped at a local pub for a pint of Guinness.
At where?
Moneygall.
Okay.
He stopped at a local pub for a pint of Guinness. He told the people he needed assurances that the proprietor, Ollie Hayes, knew how to make the perfect.
Are you really not going to do it? You're not going to do the thing?
What thing?
You're not going to call him Barack Obama.
Oh, no, that actually happened.
You're not going to verbally imply the apostrophe?
No.
Sorry. Try it again.
Barack Obama.
Wait, hold on a second. Let's see if I can, give me just a second here. Let me see if I can conjure up something Irish sounding.
All right.
All right, hold on. Let's see. What do I have under, let's see. Jig. No, hold on a second. Let's see. Irish jig. All right. There's no guarantees that this is necessarily going to work. All right. Let's see. Flumps Irish jig.
All right.
Well, that sounds wonderful. Okay, hold on a second. Let's see. All right. Let's see what Mr. Flump's Irish jig. Mr. Flump's Irish jig sounds like a terrible made for Disney movie. All right, hold on, let's see. Now I'm having to wait. Well, now I feel like I just have to wait for it to queue up and we have to pay the joke off. Should mention, by the way, you are listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. And I do believe that last Thursday's program, which was the 19th? Possibly the 18th. Last Thursday's program, which was taped a day in advance, I believe has been restored to iTunes. So if you've been, really, if your life has been just a woeful sack of pain.
If you have absolutely no idea what happened in the middle of last week.
Yeah, if you were just not really able to hear, you know, if you weren't able to be amused or entertained in any way, you couldn't face the rest of your daily hell because of the lack of Legion of News. I believe that is, in fact, at iTunes. All right, here's Mr. Flump's Irish jig.
Ah, Faith and Begorra. President Seamus Paddy Obama. Is 1/32nd Irish.
Well, see, now you're overselling the joke.
And he visited his ancestral homeland in Moneygall today. He stopped at a local pub for a pint of Guinness. He told the people he needed assurances that the proprietor, Ollie Hayes, knew how to make the perfect pour.
Because the Irish are swindlers.
Can people vouch for this guy?
Yeah.
Now we drink.
Okay.
Obama, and that's O with an apostrophe, Obama, told the proprietor it didn't need to be on the house.
I just want you to know that the president pays his bartender.
We're stereotypes.
Yeah.
All right. That really wasn't worth the buildup.
No.
All right.
So did he drink it? I guess he must have drank it because he had to, like, show up the queen. Because remember the queen and whatever her husband's name are?
The
Philip,
king?
Prince Philip. Were at a bar in...
Wait, the queen is married to a prince?
Yeah.
Isn't she the prince's mother?
Well, no, but I mean, he's the royal consort, actually. Because if he was, like, he's not king. So he's...
If you're stripping the queen, aren't you king?
No. No, you're only king if you're in line for the royal succession.
Oh, I see. He's a prince from somewhere else.
Right.
Okay, he's not like the prince from like...
I'm not sure what the deal is with that. All right. But anyway, they were in Ireland.
Can she hold her tipple?
She wouldn't drink it.
What?
They poured her the Guinness and they did the whole thing with the foam and she looked at it and said, oh, that looks fine. And she wouldn't drink it. And meanwhile, Philip was standing next to her just kind of looking at it going, I wish I could drink that. He had this look on his face and all the photographs like, so thirsty.
What do you mean she wouldn't drink it?
She wouldn't drink it.
Did she give any explanation?
I don't think so, no. I think she probably...
I'm such a tight ass.
It would be wrong for people to see me enjoying myself. Me with my little hat and my tiny purse.
Okay.
Now I'm making her Irish, too, and that doesn't work.
I don't get it. Here's the thing. The royals, I mean, look, maybe they're nice people, maybe they're not. Doesn't matter. They don't mean dick to me either way. Doesn't matter. I could not possibly care less. The royals and Elvis mean the same to me, which is nothing, zero. But Obama, well, first of all, do we have, like, extant footage? Have we ever had a president who's been on film drinking?
I'm sure we must have because
While they're in office,
they serve wine and stuff at all those state dinners.
I would
dinners.
Exclude wine from this though. I would say the wine almost doesn't count because that is a social beverage that is almost a cosmetic beverage that one has in front of one even if you're not going to or like champagne. I wouldn't count champagne either. I'm saying like, have we ever seen a president drinking a beer or like taking a shot of something while in office?
I would say possibly not since. Like, say, the Nixon years or so. But you've got to go back. You've got to figure guys like Truman. There have to be photographs of guys. Because, I mean, for one thing, he was smoking. There have to be photographs of guys like him with, you know, a glass of scotch in his hand.
But in the modern era, I would say, like, in the post-Kennedy era, I don't know that presidents are filmed or photographed or shown consuming alcoholic beverages of a... Unless, again, it's like something that is served as part of a social occasion. So, I mean, I give him points just for that. If he's actually on film just like putting down a pint of Guinness or something, that would be sort of awesome.
Yeah.
And then, let's go kill somebody else. Yeah. You know?
And then all the Irish would go, yeah!
I mean, seriously.
Scotsman!
And then the local football brigade is just carrying him out of the pub on their shoulders. Find me, pirates! You know? And just sort of running to the sea. How do they... And he's what? He's what Irish?
He says he's 132nd.
How would you even calculate? That's just stupid.
Know.
That's just made up. How would you even calculate that?
I don't know.
That's just... Here's the thing. Here's a little secret from me to you. Unless somebody just moved here from somewhere else, they're not whatever they say they are. Like, and especially because, like, if you just got on a plane from Dublin and just landed here, I might buy that you're Irish. If you were not, if you didn't just do that, you're not Irish. I don't care what you say. I don't care what kind of hat you wear once a year. I don't care how drunk you are most of the time. You're not Irish. People who are Irish are in Ireland. That's just the way that it works. Especially once you get into, like, the one... Well, you know, my mother's side, I'm 164th. Once you get past the one half, there is no way to calculate anything. You can just say whatever you want because there is no way to quantify any of it. It just becomes a bunch of... You know what? As my Irish brethren would say, Don, it becomes malarkey.
Yes.
Seriously.
Police have identified the man who was found crushed to death inside an Albany recycling center. Sergeant Jerry Drum said that 50-year-old Gordon Lemke was a known transient in the area.
Lemke!
His body was discovered Thursday morning at the Allied Waste Recycling Plant. Police believe he fell asleep inside a local retailer's cardboard compactor before his body was discovered inside the recycling plant. The death does not appear to be suspicious.
No, of course. Well, I mean, would you say this is a local transient? This is a man with no permanent residence.
And he was sleeping in one of those big cardboard recycling boxes, and apparently it just got thrown into the crusher.
Well, so. Look, nature recycles as well. I mean, he went out green, so.
You don't get much back, though, for transients when you take them, you know, to the convenience store.
Somebody is noting that Obama's presidency is a lie. He's 2/3 black. I don't even know what that means, but it makes me laugh.
The search continued Sunday for a missing fisherman from Cornelius. Crews discovered his empty boat Saturday in the Multnomah Channel near Coon Island, nearly a day after he was expected to return home. From where?
Who was this? Who?
He's a missing fisherman from Cornelius.
Some guy. Okay.
His name is Jeffrey Ferguson. He's 51 years old. Crews from three different agencies are out looking for him because they found his boat, but he wasn't on it. His family said he's an avid outdoorsman and a strong swimmer who's been fishing for 20 years. He left the Scappoose Bay Marina around 3 a.m. Friday. His family expected him back around 6 p.m. When he didn't show up, they called 911. Family members said Sunday they believe Ferguson is still alive and just needs to be found.
He's in the cave with Injun Joe. By the way, somebody's saying there was a picture of Obama having a beer in the Rose Garden with two jagoffs that were opposed to each other his first year. And then he follows up about the nature of said jagoffs. I do remember this, actually. This was, okay, so it wasn't people that were, in other words, it wasn't people who were running against him. In Obama's first year in office, he was doing his whole, like, peacemaker thing of, you know, like, bringing together separate factions. It was Henry Louis Gates, who's a Harvard professor, and James Crowley, who was the police guy. So this is the thing where Henry Louis Gates, who's like a Harvard professor, was going into his own home. And of course, the man drove by and said, well, hold on a minute. There appears to be a Negro entering this residence. Let me call for backup. And there was a whole thing where it's like they arrested him or they threw him in the back of a car. They busted the guy for basically like trying to get into his own home. And there was a whole, and it threatened to just become a big thing, like staining the first 6 months of the presidency. And so Obama did his whole thing of like calling them into the Oval Office. And I think probably just said, look, I can have everybody you know killed. So we're all going to walk out of here and we're going to smile and we're going to have a beer and then we're all going to shut the hell up and go back to our jobs. And there was a photograph, which is just called, by the way, at this website, obamasuds.jpg, of Obama, the cop, and Henry Gates, the professor, and they are all sharing a beer.
Well, that's very nice.
Because it is destruction of brain cells through alcohol that brings us all together as Americans. That's what unifies us all.
Well, I looked up online, and all I could find, I found a picture of Ronald Reagan holding a glass of wine, but it looks like he's at some state dinner. And I found a picture of Jimmy Carter drinking a beer, but it's like old Jimmy Carter, so I think it's just recently.
Well, and seriously, I mean, it's like, don't you get the feeling that at any given moment, like, Billy Carter was just there just shoving beer into everybody's hands? He was just constantly just working the room, you know, like at the Oscar pre-party, just handing out gift bags.
He was embarrassing.
Billy Carter?
Yeah, he was just unfortunate in every way.
Well, you notice that Clinton didn't take any of that. As soon as Roger Clinton started to become a big problem, you never heard from that guy again.
No.
Where's Roger Clinton? When's the last time you heard anything from Roger Clinton? No, his fat ass went into Creedy's black bag, and he was never heard from again. Let's see. Keelan is noting snarkily. Correct, Rick. I am 0% African. Lol. No, but see, that is the exception that proves the rule. That's the only one that's ever accurate. That is the only common cultural denominator that works. Everybody is, as I've often said, that, you know, here in these United States, at least, we are all African Americans. Everyone is really African. That's the only thing that's the only commonality culturally. So, see, that's it. That is the one-off that proves the other. It's the corollary to the thing with the first thing, or corollary, as they say in Britain. Mm. Oh, yeah.
So Joey Chestnut ate some cheesesteaks this weekend. He challenged other competitive eaters in the World Philly Cheesesteak Eating Championships at Dorney Park in Pennsylvania.
Did he really challenge them?
Or
I mean,
Iowa,
like, sort of like, did he throw down like a loaf of bread and, you know, like, you in the cage match?
I dare you to fill your gullet with these cheesesteaks.
Summer Slam!
Chestnut ate 23 6-inch cheesesteaks in 10 minutes. Last year, he managed 19 cheesesteaks in the same time frame. His runner-up was Bob, the notorious B.O.B. Shout, who had 819 cheesesteaks.
What do you mean, the notorious B.O.B. Shout?
That's his...
Is that like he has a chant or something? B.O.B.
His name is Bob Shout.
Oh, I see. Okay.
S-H-O-D-T.
Right.
But his nickname, his self-proclaimed name is the notorious B.O.B.
Okay.
So...
Fantastic.
Yeah.
Oh, by the way, apparently somebody's saying that Hillary did shots on the campaign trail with yokels in the Midwest.
Oh, that's right.
Which I believe unhesitatingly, by the way. Hillary strikes me as a woman that can probably hold her liquor. That's, I think it probably takes a lot of booze to knock that woman down. She seems stout of heart and of liver and of legs. You're listening to Legion of News. Jesus, it's already 12:23. Where does the time go? Here at Cascadia.fm, it is Monday, May 23rd, 2011. Next hour, Snuff Watch. Really?
Yeah.
Oh, I know who's dead. It's that guy. Let's see. Obama, or am I bluffing? Obama Watch, Democracy on the March. We'll talk to Mr. Aaron Duran at the Week in Geek. Also, Ryan White, music editor from the Oregonian, is going to be here. And I don't know if he's going to do this or not. I suggested that he put together a top five for today, that he do sort of, that he kind of follow, riff off of something that we had done, which is the top five songs to which he was subjected because of his parents. The top five songs to which he was subjected growing up because of his mother and father. So that is later on at rickemersonshow.com. You can find out more about that by going to rickemersonshow.com, where you can be entertained and amused for the cost of just 32 cents a day, along with brand new listeners Lisa, Mina, and Tyler.
Let's do our science news.
Not so much Lester, just Tyler. What?
Science.
Science. Yes, science.
Let's do something.
What about, I thought you were just sort of taking a moment to acknowledge it. Sort of like
science.
Life's rich pageant.
It exists.
It's there. Let's see. Science of the March is brought to you by Squires Electric. You can find out more about them by going to squireselectric.com or facebook.com/Squires Electric. You can also call them. It's 503-252-1609. That is 503-252-1609. Facebook.com/Squires Electric is a good place to see a lot of unsolicited testimonials. These are just unprompted ravings from the audience. Just long mellifluous and flowery exclamations of the skill and efficiency of Squires Electric, including our good friend, actually, Aaron Duran, who's on there. And I had no idea that was the case, that Squires Electric apparently wired his entire building, as they did this studio, as they have done for many listeners of Legion of News and the Rick Emerson Show, as they can do for you, your home, your business, or some confluence of the two. Find them at 503-252-1609 or SquiresElectric.com. They are licensed, bonded, and insured electrical installers, contractors, and supervisors. If it has to do with wires or wiring in your home or business, they can make your life easier. So you contact them and tell them you heard it right here at Legion of News at Cascadia.fm. Here is Don Taylor.
Endeavour astronauts got a special treat on Saturday. The 12 visitors to the International Space Station took a break from the next-to-last flight in NASA's shuttle program to receive a phone call and a blessing from Pope Benedict XVI. You are a representative spearheading humanity's exploration of new spaces and possibilities for our future, the Pope told astronauts in the Vatican's first ever phone call to space.
The clergy have run out of spaces to explore down here.
Speaking directly to Mark Kelly, Benedict wished the astronaut's wife, Representative Gabrielle Giffords, a swift recovery from the gunshot wound she sustained in an attack this year, and praised the dozen space travelers for their courage and discipline. Watching NASA's broadcast of the station's orbit, the pontiff also noted the unifying perspective of space, communicating that war must seem absurd when looking at the planet from orbit. Kelly responded that in space, solar power was the source of electricity, and that he hoped harnessing that energy source better on Earth might reduce war, since so many conflicts seem to be based on resources.
Is this news written by Hallmark?
It's kind of nice, though. It's like that they have this all the Pope says, war must seem so petty when seen from up there. And Kelly goes, yeah, well, you know, we use solar power up here. Solar power works. Maybe people would stop killing each other so much if we use more solar power. Take that, Pontiff. He says, my wife was shot in the head. I got nothing to lose. I'm an astronaut.
Okay.
The phone call was arranged by the European Space Agency and the Italian Space Agency and connected with the help of Mission Control in Houston. Meanwhile, on Earth, NASA has made a different sort of connection. The organization nabbed a California woman trying to sell a moon rock on the black market for $1.7 million. Considered national treasures, moon rocks were given to 136 countries and every U.S. state by President Nixon's administration.
By the way, most of them are wood.
Yeah, selling them is illegal.
Yeah.
So she tried to sell one.
Yeah. Yeah, they're wood painted black, by
the way. Are they really?
Yes, they are, which is a thing, by the way, and you'd think that would, and I'm not making that up, you'd think that would be a larger story.
Yeah.
That most of the moon rocks, I mean, unsurprisingly from Richard Nixon, that most of the moon rocks he gave people, literally, they were just, it was just like crap they found in the backyard. That they just spray painted and went, it's from the moon. Nixon wants you to have this. And it was, how would you know, right? Yeah. I mean, it's like, you know, it's like you're Iceland.
I've been to the moon and
right.
This, yeah.
Because by definition, the only people who are going to be able to tell that are the people who've actually gone to the moon. Hello, us. So if you give a moon rock to, like, you know, Saskatchewan, Like, what? How are they ever going to, you know, they have no actual moon pieces to compare it to.
And they're never going there.
No, and so Nixon could just keep all that. Nixon's keeping this for himself. And it would just go back home and, like, stay in the dining room, or he and Pat would look at it while she wore her Republican cloth coat. And then, you know, and then he would go to bed and congratulate himself on a job well done. There was, I think it was Bill Bryson, actually, that wrote a piece about it for National Geographic. That he's, you know, what most of you may have seen when you thought you were seeing moon rocks were just pieces of plywood or whatever. It was just pieces of, like, wood or just regular rock from, like, a quarry somewhere that literally they just stuck in a box and said were moon rocks and just gave to the rest of the country.
This is a national outrage. We should be ashamed of ourselves.
And it is one of those things that, like, is true and that I don't think the government has ever even denied, and yet, like, no one knows. I mean, if I ran a newspaper, that would be, like, tomorrow's headline story right after that goddamn gorilla that can speak English.
So do you think that some of the countries, though, they know now, they've learned over the years? I mean, it was published that this happened. So do you think they, like, look at their moon rock and go, oh, God,
no, they, well,
it's not a real moon rock.
I think Bryson noted that they're actually still there. Like, most of the places that had moon rocks on display, they just leave them there because it's like, what are they going to replace it with? And plus, to remove it, they then have to admit, like, well, we've been showing you a moon rock that is really just made of plaster.
Apparently, we weren't good enough to get a real one.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, you know, they have to admit to people that, and then people have to admit that they've been lining it to look at styrofoam for 20 years or whatever. So no, they just everybody pretends that you know, nothing to see. It's like the emperor's new stones.
You know, the more I hear, the more I start to think that Nixon may have been a little shady.
Yes, he was not quite on the up and up.
Here's a little bit of tech news that may just make you go, huh, why? It turns out the latest scuttlebutt on the iPhone 5 is that the next iPhone will have a curved glass touchscreen. The DigiTimes, which cites industry sources, has stated that Apple has snapped up between 200 and 300 glass-cutting machines to make curved iPhone displays. Why Apple and not the glass manufacturers would be buying these machines is a mystery. But basically, they think that cover glass makers were reluctant to commit investment to the purchase of special equipment due to the high capital involved. Basically saying, we're not going to spend a bunch of our own money to, like, buy a thing to make it for Apple. If Apple wants to spend money to buy these special machines, they can buy them themselves.
Well, and it makes sense that Apple would do it because Apple's they're a vertically integrated company, and that, you know, Apple owns the phone, they own the software, they own the stores that sell you the software, they own the stores, you know, that sell you, you know, all of the upgrades and service you know, and auxiliary products and accessories for this. I mean, so it makes sense that they would bring as much of this in-house as possible. I just don't understand why you'd want a curved glass screen.
I guess the only two reasons I can come up with is one, because Google, the Google Nexus S already has a curved screen. So they want, just on the off chance, people think curved screens are cooler.
They want to be able to do it.
Apple wants to make sure they go, no, we got a curved screen. And also, apparently, it's supposed to be more comfortable to hold to your ear.
Well, I guess I could see that. Well, maybe if you're an old person and you're trying to do the thing of cradling the phone, like, in the crook of your neck on a long phone call,
which I've seen you do.
Well, that's why I have that headset, actually, is because, like, doing that is just incredible. It's just a pain in the ass. So it's like a couple weeks ago when they had Lisa and I, like, in a room for 20 hours doing interviews, and it's like, that's why I went out and I actually had to make sure that I had, you know, that I had a headset that was actually going to be decent and durable and work all day, because there's just no way you can do that. And if you need to have your hands free, then you're in this precarious thing of, like, cinching your head down so close to your shoulder that you give yourself, like, some sort of weird spinal injury, because the only alternative is to hold the phone loosely, thus risk dropping it, ending the call, and, like, shattering your $400 iPhone or whatever. The thing I wonder about is, like, when they're finally going to do, like, an edge-to-edge screen. Because any iPhone I've ever seen has that black border around the screen where they're not making the most of the surface display. So an edge-to-edge screen is the thing that I would really like to do. I mean, not that it really matters, but that's the thing that I would think they would want to do.
And that's what I've heard they're actually working on, is that they would like to just get rid of everything on the face, including, you know, the home button and everything. So.
No, it's true. And then, you know, and the other thing is, Apple apparently is not only are they getting rid of the one remaining button on the iPhone and presumably the one button on the iPad, but I guess Jobs' next thing, and I'm not making this up, apparently his next thing is to get rid of the URL bar. So when you, I guess probably in the Safari browser, and then maybe, so I guess because that is the built-in browser on most of their hardware, that he wants to get rid of the URL bar, and it would be a thing that would hover It would be like when you have the dock function turned on in your Mac or something, where if you take the mouse down there, the dock appears. But then as soon as you mouse off of it, the dock vanishes. The URL bar would be like that to maximize the amount of screen display that you would have. Because his whole point is, like, you use that URL bar like 1/10 of the time you're actually using your phone, if that. And yet it's always there taking up screen space. He's like, why can't we just make it a thing that vanishes when you're not using it? So.
And I'm all for that. I just say, you know, getting a new laptop and installing the newest version of Firefox and seeing that they finally, they've shrunk the top, like,
right,
you know, the bar, the task bars and things down a little bit. Because it was getting really bulky. They had that whole thing where they just kept adding stuff. And, of course, every time you install anything, it goes, do you want to install a Yahoo taskbar?
Right.
And you go, no, no, no. And then one time you miss that button and you have a Yahoo taskbar for the rest of your life.
Yeah. It's just that. Well, that's what's like how that, like the new Google keyboard doesn't have the caps lock. We had that whole discussion about it on the second show that Google finally went, no, we're getting rid of it. And they just got, you know, so it's. It will be curious to see. I'll be curious to see exactly how people respond to stuff like that. But that is the anyway. So that's the latest iPhone 5
yes.
rumor.
Viagra may help you with your intimacy if you are a gentleman, but researchers say evidence is proving that the little blue pill and others like it could cause hearing loss. UK researchers surveyed drug watchdogs in the U.S. and other parts of the world and uncovered 47 cases of sudden hearing loss linked to anti-impotence drugs. Another 223 possible reports from the U.S. had to be excluded due to lack of detail.
Is this where you can't hear her say she's got a headache?
Yes, that's it. Sorry, honey. There's something in my ear. It wasn't clear how long the hearing loss lasted. A new U.S. study also finds that taking Viagra could double your chances of hearing loss, according to Reuters. Researchers found that 1 in 3 men over the age of 40 who took Viagra suffered hearing loss, while only 1 in 6 of those not taking the drug suffered the same fate. Scientists suspect a chain of chemical reactions caused by the drugs could be harming the inner ear. The FDS has warned about possible hearing complications associated with Viagra and other anti-impotence drugs for a few years.
It's hard for me to imagine men really having a problem with this. It seems like the trade-off is... It seems like that's that is more than a fair exchange.
Yeah. My hearing, my boner. My feet are itchy.
Okay, I was just wondering what you were doing over there.
Sorry.
Looked like you were sort of dancing a jig or something, or you were just sort of like you had a boogie fever that couldn't be contained.
No, itchy feet. I'm done with science now.
Okay, there you go. There's my hearing, my boner. Okay. Tonight on Lifetime.
It's the, it's sort of the male version of our daughters ourselves.
That's your Science of the March, brought to you by Squires Electric. You can find them at squireselectric.com or facebook.com/squireselectric, or you can call them if you like. It's 503-252-1609. That is 503-252-1609. Someone just types, your Nixon impression is frightening. Please to not be doing that ever again. Sorry about that. There's your Science of the March, part of Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. Do you think Wagner wants a religious program? We could roll that out. That could be the next exciting product from the Emerson News Network.
Could do a Sunday worship service.
I have no scruples. Doesn't matter to me.
Okay.
All right. There's money to be made. Rick Emerson is there. You count me in.
Would we go with the classic Christian God, or would we just make up our whole own new thing?
No, the Christian God. That's really where the bulkier money is. That's a target-rich environment.
Okay. Well, we'll make a note. We'll brainstorm that. We'll put a pin in that. We'll run it up the flagpole.
Yeah, we want to avoid any sort of frugal deities, if you know what I mean, and I think you do.
Mississippi Governor Haley Barbour has decided he won't run for president next year. That doesn't mean he doesn't have things to say about those who are running, or likely to. Barbour says Newt Gingrich has had a tough week, but the media is at least partly to blame.
If you heard Newt make a 45-minute speech, even moderately liberal people thought, man, that guy's thoughtful and smart. But the sound bites that managed to get on TV made people think, what a jerk.
Newt. I like the way he says, Newt.
I like the way at the end that, what a jerk, is all, that, man, what a jerk, is two syllables. Let's just.
If you heard Newt make a 45-minute speech, even moderately liberal people thought, man, that guy's thoughtful and smart. But the sound bites that managed to get on TV made people think, what a jerk.
What jerk.
What a jerk.
It's all one, what jerk.
I think what he's talking about, by the way, that he's had a tough week, by the way, on Tuesday, Politico reported that Gingrich has owed and may still owe between $250,000 and $500,000 to Tiffany for jewelry.
Is Tiffany a hooker?
No, Tiffany & Company, the jeweler.
What would Newt Gingrich need that much jewelry from Tiffany for?
Really don't know. I think it's
for
all
hookers,
for his wife. For his wife, Callista, who left him like in 2007. Or, yeah. Oh, no, it's a... Anyway, financial disclosure forms, that his wife filed in 2006 and 2007 while she was employed by the House Agriculture Committee. And it's not clear whether or not Gingrich has actually paid off the debt. So apparently it was just...
Wait, so it's like his wife's charge card?
Kind of, yeah. So, but, you know, he likes to be like Mr. Man of the People, Mr. I'm just like
you. Are they
you,
buffed it
Mr.
up? Are they divorced?
No, I guess not.
Because he could totally be like, well, you know, women be shopping. What are you going to do? I would totally.
Am I right, guys? Am I right?
Totally play that card if I were him. I'm like, you guys know what it's like when the little lady goes out shopping? She comes home from Cartier. Are you with me? Hey. How about the game last night? Who wants some suds? You know, and it's like, that is totally how I'd play that if I were him. Also, he made a huge miscalculation last week by talking about Republican solutions to, you know, the so-called Obamacare, and saying he didn't want a radical liberal solution, and then he said, but I also don't want a radical Republican solution, which then immediately alienated like 80% of his base, who are of course radical Republicans, and so there was this whole, and we're living in a weird time because he had to do this conference call, one with the head of the RNC, one with the Wall Street Journal and some of the other, you know, sort of papers of the Washington Times. And then he did a third phone call that was just with conservative bloggers. Like, it was just like a bunch of like Chuck Todd type guys, because he had so badly put his foot in his mouth. And that is such. And the Republican Party is even more so than the Democratic Party. The Republican Party really has, like, mobilized the power of the Internet, because the Internet is the home to crazy people. And crazy people are, like, I would say, like, probably two-thirds more likely to not be Democrats. I mean, they're not going to necessarily be Republicans. But really, really, your freakishly crazy folks are never going to be Democrats. They're going to be, like, I mean, they're going to be, like, libertarians, you know, or they're going to, you know...
Green Party.
Yeah, the Green, or, like, the People's Constitutional Republic Party or something. So he had to do this whole, like, thing where he just, like, bent over and just took a flogging from everybody for saying he didn't want any, crazy conservative solutions to anything.
Well, Barbara also says Gingrich has said some things he'd probably like to take back, probably, like that. Oh, but... Go ahead.
Sorry, the barber can't be held back.
I've said stuff in my career that I wish I could take back.
It's hard to believe.
Really, sir?
Yes.
Is that it? That's all he has to say about that? I've said some things. Meat.
I've said stuff in my career that I wish I could take back.
That's wonderful. That's great. Okay.
Yeah. Well, a man was arrested Friday night for breaking into a Portland Papa Murphy's and drinking a soda. Timothy Chapek, 24, broke through three plate glass windows and damaged the front door of the store, which was on Southwest Beaverton Hillsdale Highway. Once inside, Chapek drank a soda and took some mail. Chapek is being held on charges of burglary and criminal mischief.
He drank a soda and took some mail.
Yeah.
Okay.
In March, he was arrested for breaking into a Southwest Portland house to take a shower. He's the guy who called 911 when the owner came home and the dog was barking at him.
Right. No, but was he the guy that was just sitting there nude eating chicken covered in blood?
No, he was in the shower. Remember, he barricaded himself in the bathroom.
Oh, that's right.
And the homeowner was there, and the dog was barking at him, and he called the guy going, "Please, you have to come help me. I think this guy's going to hurt me."
Yes, I do remember that.
And the homeowner was going, "There's a guy in my bathroom."
It's all coming back to me now.
Yeah.
Let me just one more time.
I've said stuff in my career that I wish I could take back.
Ah, that's wonderful. Tell me more about the rabbits. He sounds just like the knife guy, too. Everybody from the South in the last, like, month or so, they've all morphed into the late-night knife sale guy. That's wonderful. I'm going to file that away.
It's like how all airline pilots talk like Chuck Yeager.
They all talk like Chuck Yeager, all of them.
So...
All right, and so he's not running for president, which means I don't get to sell his political opponents my avoid the barber tagline, which I had polished up, was ready to
clipped by the barber.
Yeah, I was ready to roll it out and sell it. No, got nothing.
Two escort services in Utah have filed a federal lawsuit to halt a Utah solicitation law they fear could lead to the arrest of strippers for simply acting sexy. Utah defines solicitation as a person agreeing to sex in exchange for money. A new law that went into effect this month broadened the definition to include any person who indicates through lewd acts, such as exposing or touching themselves, that they intend to exchange sex for money. It was intended to help law enforcement agents working undercover in prostitution stings. According to Salt Lake City Police Chief Chris Burbank, he said it would protect officers who were being asked by prostitutes to expose or touch themselves to prove they're not police, because making such requests as a precursor for offering sex for money is illegal under the new law. Officers were being put in a position that we're not going to allow, so we took a different direction, Burbank said.
Not a new direction.
No. He was very careful to say a different direction,
okay.
I think.
That's too bad.
Andrew McCullough, an attorney representing the escort services, said that the law is so broad it could allow police to arrest licensed employees of sexually oriented businesses, such as escort services or strip club dancers, for doing their job. The expanded law includes language that makes a person exposing their genitals or touching themselves sexually an indication that they are offering sex. Those acts are legal in Utah for private strippers. Most girls who touch their breasts are not telling you they are open for sex.
Oh, that is a lie. That is just a fiction.
Rick.
Dawn's touching her bosoms right now. It's making me feel uncomfortable.
McCullough said the law is virtually identical to one struck down by a federal judge as unconstitutional in 1988. The Utah law could be used by police to hassle businesses protected by the First Amendment. For example, McCullough said he made a semi-nude dancer. He said a semi-nude dancer at a strip club could be arrested for suggestively thrusting.
Tell me more about how the man be busting up your business.
Brubeck said officers would not target anyone who is not a prostitute. Uh-huh. Because, you know, law enforcement officials.
Except how would they know?
Law enforcement officials never abuse the law.
But that doesn't make any sense. If they're going to say we're not going to target anybody who's not a prostitute, by definition, you would not know she's a prostitute until she has been convicted of prostitution, which means that you would have to actively target her to arrest her, to convict her.
Well, unless...
There's just no logical underpinning there.
Well, not really, because if the way the law is worded is that anyone can be arrested who is suggestively touching themselves, and therefore it's an intent to solicit sex, they could use that law to actually go to strip clubs, to go to...
Right, but they're saying that they're not going to target anybody who's not a prostitute. And
right.
I'm saying, like, how would you know? In other words, how do they make the distinction of who's a prostitute and who's not, unless... That is like total cart before the horse thinking. You actually have to engage in this law enforcement activity to determine if someone is a prostitute. And in fact, they would actually have to go to court and be convicted of prostitution. So that doesn't... I'm just saying logically, I don't understand that the approaches. It seems all wrong to me.
Well, what they're saying is we know where the hookers are, and we've passed this law so that it'll make us easier to get the hookers. We're not going to go after the strippers.
Okay.
Is what they're saying.
And in my experience... Well, first of all, the other thing about that is that, I mean, unless things have changed, which it's possible that they have, maybe Salt Lake City's really, like, loosened up. Maybe it's become a real... Maybe the Olympics really just brought in a fresh wind of moral change. But strippers were not allowed to be anything but topless when I lived there.
Well, that's what it said. Apparently private strippers.
Oh, I see.
So, which I guess there's a difference in Utah.
So if you were not stripping in a public, like if it was like a one-on-one, like private show in one's hotel room or place of residence.
Yeah, I guess so.
Okay. Because those were a thing that they advertised constantly, like in the... you know, like in the nickel ads or whatever, like the, or what do you mean, like the alternative, like the Willamette Week style, like the Salt Lake City Weekly, I guess they would have those, where like, there was all, and by the way, there was always this huge fat warthog of a woman named, and she called herself Temptation. And then, but the second T was doubled. It was T-E-M-P-T-T-A-T-I-O-N.
So she was Temptation.
Temptation or something, but she advertised in the Weekly the entire time I lived in Salt Lake, and it was the same thing. It must have really worked because it was like one stock ad that it was like her name, her phone number, and then it was some sort of vague kind of, you know, sort of amorphous description of, you know, like, I'll give you complete satisfaction, baby. But long before we had these sorts of terms, she was doing like the classic sort of MySpace, like Facebook thing of like angling up in just the right way that, you know, you could, but clearly, I mean, there was like a lot of, you know, that was like 16 stone of woman. And, but she was like a fixture, in the back of those, in the back of those ads. And it's like, that was a huge industry in Salt Lake because strip clubs themselves could not do anything. And in fact, strip clubs in Salt Lake, when I lived there, it was like, what was even the point of strip clubs? I don't even, if they haven't changed them, If this is still run the way that it was when I lived there, I don't know why you would even go to a strip club in Salt Lake, because not only could you not be bottomless, you had to be topless only. You couldn't even really be topless. You had to have like the little tassly pasty things.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, what is the point of that? I mean, it was there seemed to be almost literally no point to the strip clubs existing.
It's interesting that we still have these, you know, blue laws at all, really. And they're so strange, and they vary from like state to state and county to county. So I was just watching this weekend, I watched a documentary on burlesque dancers called A Wink and a Smile. And it was about a burlesque troupe in Seattle and a woman who actually gives classes to women to learn to do burlesque. And apparently, like, because they do their shows in places that serve alcohol, the law in Washington is that you can't have full nudity any place that there's booze.
If there's booze, yeah.
There has to be, and it's very specific. It's like, you know, the nipples and the areola have to be covered, so you got to have the pasties. There has to be like a 4-inch strip of fabric, you know, around the
genital
area.
If you go to the Deja Vu in Washington, that's why you end up buying the girls not champagne, but you end up buying them orange juice or ginger ale or something, because you can't buy the girls alcohol any place that there's going to be full nudity.
It's sort of insane, isn't it?
Yes, it is. No, it's incredibly insane. I mean, it's less insane in Salt Lake only because it makes sense. Like, you would, I mean, you sort of expect it there.
Yeah.
But my whole thing is just from the patron point of view, although I guess there's something to be said for the, I guess it's the whole sort of, you know, it's like that episode of Little House on the Prairie where they're looking at the Sears catalog and they're all turned on because they get to see, you know, like they get to see a woman, you know, in a slightly more revealing petticoat than she would normally wear. And so it was like,
I can see your ankles.
Yeah. I mean, it literally was that. It was like where, what's his name, Matthew Laborteaux or whatever his name is. They're like looking at a Sears catalog and it's like you can see the tops of a woman's feet. And it's like, you know, and suddenly he has to go off and, you know. He has to go off and, I don't know, bale hay or something.
I kissed him once, by the way.
Really? I think you mentioned that.
Yeah, I've had a weird life.
But, you know, so maybe it's that. Maybe in Salt Lake, it's like the bar is set so low that if you just see some chick in what are basically like hot pants and pasties, I mean, it's like it's basically like you're seeing a donkey show, you know, but like Salt Lake style. Because it's just, you know, you've been swinging bats in, you know, in the on-deck circle like the whole time.
A Salt Lake style donkey show.
Yeah.
It's a lady in bloomers.
Yes.
Let's do entertainment.
Here's your entertainment news for Monday, May 23rd.
The Brad Pitt movie Tree of Life received the coveted Palme d'Or Award Sunday at the Cannes Film Festival. Best actress went to Kirsten Dunst for the movie Melancholia, with French actor Jean Dujardin winning for Best Actor for the silent movie The Artist. Best Director honors went to Nicholas Winding Refn for his movie Drive. TMZ is reporting that Oscar De La Hoya has been in a rehab facility for most of this month. After doing an honest evaluation of myself, I recognize that there are certain issues I need to work on, said De La Hoya in a statement. Like everyone, I have my flaws, and I do not want to be one of those people that is afraid to admit and address those flaws. He did not reveal the specifics of his rehab, but TMZ says he is being treated for substance abuse. Grammy-winning songwriter Joseph Brooks died of an apparent suicide. The 73-year-old, who was set to go to trial for allegedly sexually assaulting about a dozen women, won a Grammy and an Oscar for the song You Light Up My Life. Brooks' corpse was discovered at his Upper East Side apartment, and police report that he was found with a plastic bag over his head.
Did you read this thing about the Antonio Banderas film at Cannes?
No.
It's awesome. I don't know. I was wondering if I should save this till next hour, but I will just because you were just talking about because it's the Malick film that won Tree of Life. Boy, which just, I mean, here's the thing about Terrence Malick. I know that he's a guy that I'm supposed to like, and he's a guy that I'm supposed to find to be brilliant, whatever. But boy, his films are just turgid exercises and tedium sometimes. Yeah, I'm watching The Thin Red Line and just like feeling it, just my life force just ebbing away from me.
Yeah, Tree of Life looks really interesting, but at the same time, even people I know who saw it, who liked it, because I know a couple of guys that were at the film festival, even a guy I know who liked it said, yeah, but you know, he makes it hard. There's like this 15-minute stretch with no dialogue, with just watching shadows crawl across the landscape.
And they didn't, the way that I saw it phrased was they said it unfolds at a deliberate pace.
Yeah.
And that was like our friend Siegfried sent this to me. He said, not sure if you've seen this. He said, I always think it's hilarious when people walk out during a movie. My favorite part of this article, he said, is the American contest winners who win a trip to Cannes, France, from the Stella Beer Company. Then the rubes get dressed up. They go to a fancy dinner. They walk the red carpet. and then they walk out of a movie starring Antonio Banderas. I'll read more of it next hour. Basically what happens is, it's that, I am not making this up. The best part of this article is these people who entered in America. They entered from the Stella Artois.
Yeah.
They entered to win. I mean, it's like, and you got to know what you're in for. Like, if you're going to Cannes, it's not like they're going to be showing you like a new Rob Schneider movie. I mean, it's, you know, you might be seeing something that is not like what you would normally catch at your multiplex in Tigard. And so they enter, they win, they go all the way there. They, you know, and they do the whole thing. They do the dinner. They meet whoever. They do the red carpet. They walk in, and they're in this movie like 7 minutes. And then they stand up and they scream at the screen, and then they turn around and they walk out all angrily. Listen to the description of this Antonio Banderas. Imagine that you're just like some rubes from just like Lickskillet, Kansas, and you just get on a plane, you get packed off, you know. And of course, and this is in France, is it not?
It is indeed.
So of course, you know, they're already just, you know, they're already not liking the trip because they end up surrounded by French people, and you say to yourself, well, they're going to take us over there to see a moving picture. That'll be exciting. And then you sit down and this is what you watch. The film, which stars Antonio Banderas and budding Spanish actress Elena Anaya, focuses on a mad but brilliant surgeon who kidnaps a man who raped his daughter. The daughter's doctor killed herself from the grief, and it drives him to take very drastic measures. This, says the article rather unnecessarily, is where it gets complicated and disturbing. And now again, imagine that you're just, you know, you're just like Mr. and Mrs. Turnip Truck, and you've gone over there, and you're already annoyed because, you know, nowhere in France are you able to find French fries to your liking. There you are, sitting there in the theater, there's no 20 to gradually ease you into the whole experience, and then you watch a film in which, quote, Banderas then gives the rapist a sex change and transplants his deceased daughter's face onto his body. He later has sex with the man he has brutally experimented on and turned into a woman. Oh, incidentally, the movie also contains, this is also unnecessary, I think, several disturbing rape sequences and nudity. There you go. Pa, let's go see us a picture.
Now I would say, I would offer, though, that it is quite possible that sending the American contest winners to that particular film might have been a lapse of judgment.
Many guests, among the a group of sweepstakes winners, flown specially to Cannes by Stella Artois from the U.S. to enjoy a once-in-a-lifetime movie premiere, they delivered on that, were horrified by the experience. The group of Americans left and did not come back to the theater following a particularly violent rape scene in the middle of the film.
That delights me in some way. You know, okay. It really does.
Yes. Hey, that's wonderful.
So before we go, I did want to...
Critics have fallen in love with the film and we're placing it in contention for the highest Cannes honor.
I did want to mention, and I'm mostly interested in this piece because of the way it's written, okay? So basically it's like, I'm going to read the whole thing and then I just want you to pay special attention to the emphasis placed on the last sentence here. Actress Sarah Rue married Kevin Price Saturday at the Bel Air Bay Club in Malibu, California. I've never been happier. I feel so lucky to have found someone as kind, funny, and smart as Kevin, said Rue, who lost 50 pounds the past year, according to Us Magazine. Because that's the important thing. She's no longer fat, thus enabling her to find love.
Well, it seems to have worked out.
Thank you, Us Magazine. Because no one would have ever found Sarah Rue attractive or talented or interesting or lovable.
I think the thing about that piece is that she's another one of those chicks that kept screaming about how she was fine with how she looked and she didn't care what anybody thought, which is like, and the thing is, when
but then Jenny Craig offered her a big pile of money to lose weight.
I don't even really necessarily know that it's Jenny Craig. She was making a big pile of money beforehand. I mean, it's just like that's one of those things that it's like how, you know, Dan Savage was noting that it's like, you know, I think he was talking about when Melissa Etheridge and Julie Cypher were going on every television show in the world and proclaiming that they were in love forever and they would never, ever divorce. And he's like, you don't ever want to get on television. They were never, ever going to divorce.
No.
We're going to be together forever. We're soulmates. This union will stand that, because they were divorced like 3 months later. He's like, that guarantees you will get divorced. And so that does see the I'm fine with the way I look and I don't care what anybody says and I don't need to fit society's expectations of my appearance. That seems to be the last stop on the railroad before you get off and you switch trains onto Gastric Bypass Boulevard.
But it's also just I just find it rather hilarious, though, that you know, a news aggregate or Us Magazine, whoever, this thing. It's like, I've gotten married. I'm so happy because Ivan Levin gotten married. And then they actually try to imply the reason she's never been happier is actually because she's not fat anymore.
I will say this, that I found her really hot in Gypsy 83 was the name of the movie she was in, where she played this Stevie Nicks obsessed kind of crazy girl.
And she had huge
cans. No, they were massive. They were the... I'm trying to make a Cannes Film Festival joke.
Oh.
She won the Cannes Film... No, see, it doesn't really work. These trip to Cannes. Mm-hmm. No, I got nothing.
Yeah.
All right, well, I'll come back maybe tomorrow. I'll workshop that. And with that, we put the pin in this. Another exciting episode of Legion of News, live from the studios of the Emerson News Network. We thank you for joining us. We come to you live each and every weekday with Don Taylor at the news desk, Advanced Technology and Magic, Governor of Mr. Thomas Gill, Executive Producer Bruce Agle, Chief of Staff Cheryl Kanakoa. Next hour, the Rick Emerson Radio program at rickemersonshow.com. Today, welcoming brand new subscribers and listeners, Lisa, Mina, and Tyler. We thank you all for joining us. Don't forget, this program is available later on the day via iTunes or as a direct MP3 download here or at legionofnews.com. Have a safe and satisfying Monday. We'll see you tomorrow at Tuesday for another installment of Legion of News.